My brand new book, Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth, is now available. So much more than a book, this is a guide that allows me to hold your hand through your birth preparation journey. With over a decade of experience and knowledge packed in to ensure you really are empowered in the way you deserve to achieve a positive birth, regardless of the twists and turns that crop up. Make sure that you get your hands on Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth book now and are empowered to have the birth experience that you deserve. Hello, I'm Pip and welcome to the Midwife Pip podcast, the home of expert information and real chats on all things pregnancy, birth and beyond. Building close relationships and bonding as a new parent reduces the likelihood of mental health difficulties throughout your child's life. The newborn time is a critical period of social and emotional development, and new research highlights many parents are unaware of the link between their baby's good mental health and early childhood development. I'm excited to be joined by this week's guest, Dr. Amanda Gummer, who is a child development expert and is working on a new government campaign, Start for Lives, If They Could Tell You. This is launched to support parents to help build secure bonds and to help nurture their baby's future mental health. So welcome, Amanda, and thank you for joining me today to talk about such an important topic.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Now, before we delve in, I'm always fascinated to learn a little bit about the journey that people take to develop essentially their interest and expertise. So I wonder what led you to become interested specifically, Amanda, in child development?
Well, I'd done a psychology degree and then a PhD as well. So sort of brain development was what I focused on for my PhD. So that was sort of underlined, but it really kicked off when I had my own kids. And I'll be honest, I didn't find parenting as easy as I thought I would. And I felt like I should have. I ticked all the boxes, you know, I got a psychology background, I had a supportive family, we weren't struggling, we were, you know, it should have been easy, and it just wasn't. And so I wanted to make sure I was doing the best I could for my kids, and I went back and researched what that would look like. And because I was also tutoring at the time in early childhood development for the Open University, that kind of brought me back up to speed with the real developmental bit. It wasn't just the neuropsychology, it was the everything else that goes on with it. So that's where it all sort of really stemmed from.
Oh, and that makes total sense to why you're so passionate about the topic and getting involved in, you know, government campaigns and things. Often it is from our own lived experiences, isn't it, that we recognize that we want to create and carve some change for others?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the worst feeling for me was the guilt and parental guilt about feeling like you're not good enough, you're not doing it right, and you're not, you know, these things are so dependent on you. And my two were very close together, so I had two very little people who looked to me for pretty much everything. And the fear of not getting it right or not knowing what the right thing to do was, I think, and that guilt was really overpowering at times. And I completely get why. I'm really supportive of campaigns where we're empowering parents to make decisions that are right for them rather than telling people what they should or shouldn't do, because I think that just adds to guilt.
Yeah, and the pressure, the societal pressure around parenting is insane, isn't it? Probably, you know, greater than ever with the rise of social media and constant access to other parents and opinions. And it's a real challenging time, I think. So it's incredible the work that you're doing to take the pressure off, make it a bit easier, give people, you know, reliable information, which is what we are craving as parents, for sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that evidence-based information that comes from a source you can trust, such as the Start for Life website, is so important, because you do get bombarded by all the latest fads on social media and, you know, you don't know whether it's a good thing, and everybody's talking about it on your feed, and you're like, oh, well, should I be trying this? Shouldn't I be trying this? And what works for me? And families are different, and babies don't come with a manual. So you have to make decisions that are right for your whole family. And families are all different shapes and sizes too. So there isn't a one size fits all, but by using the evidence-based advice and the research that's behind it to make decisions that work for you and your family can really help parents feel more confident, can help them do the right thing or the best for their kids, which is what we all want. And but doing it in a way that doesn't make them feel guilty or inadequate or, you know, compared to others.
Yeah, oh my goodness, it's so funny, isn't it? I feel like babies should definitely come with a manual. That's something we need to work on. I often say as a midwife, great. Transparent abdomens would be really helpful, but also individual baby manuals. But it's almost like you hit parenting, don't you? And there's no like pre-qualification or, you know, job description that you've had to tick off or, you know, pre-training. It literally is like overnight, bam, you're a parent. What do I do? So it's no wonder we feel that massive overwhelm and guilt.
Yeah, and a lot of the antenatal classes are great, but they sort of get to birth, and once you've left hospital, or you know, maybe they cover a bit of breastfeeding, but then what? You know, and I think so. You know, the NCT does a great job, and there are parent support groups, but again, that can if they don't go well, you end up just comparing yourself to the other people in the group, and that can add guilt and resentment and feelings of inadequacy as well. And that, so I think, you know, they're great when they work, but you've got to come from a place of you feeling confident about your decisions for your family. Mm-hmm. And that only comes from having access to good evidence-based, reliable advice.
Absolutely. And I know, you know, for parents that have tried to look into a little bit about parenting and brain development, we always hear about this first 2 years being a really critical window essentially in development and mental well-being for children. Why is that first 2 years thought to be so important, Amanda?
Because brains are developing so quickly. We're making probably about a million connections a second in a baby's brain from all the different stimuli that are coming in. So it's so important that those connections are healthy, stable, good quality, you know, come from a good place, because they form the foundation for all the rest of the development. And it's not to say that if you have a rough start in life, you can't recover and get, you know, compensate for that. But let's try and give them the best start in life by making sure that kids are laying down those connections positively, and they are getting that stimulation and that interaction from parents. And they get a lot of that, you know, those connections come from that interaction with the world around them and the primary carers. And that's what forms those really strong attachments and then the connections that really set kids up for life.
Yeah, it's such a powerful time, isn't it? I feel like we can really easily underestimate that newborn period, because a newborn baby doesn't communicate with us in the way that an adult does. So we can really kind of, I think, underestimate those simple things. But what links do we know, Amanda, exist between mental health and those early childhood experiences that you mentioned with those secure attachments and things?
So if you think about those neural connections in the first couple of years, they're the foundations, and you build anything on rocky, you know, wobbly foundations, it's so much less stable, it's more likely to fall over. And the analogy works, you know, the first couple of years, even up to the first 5 years, but especially the first couple of years, are so crucial for giving children the connections in the brain that act as the sort of the superhighways, if you like, because they get strengthened and they get repeated. And you've got those sort of really core connections that children have that they can then use to build on. And things like, if you are securely attached when you're very little, you're more likely to be independent when you're older, because you've got that secure base. You know that there is a safe place, and you can come back to base, and your base may be your parents or your home, but you've got that safe space because you've got those strong attachments, which then means that you have confidence to go and explore and be adventurous and take the world and you know, make it your own. And that's what we want for our kids, isn't it?
100%. And it makes sense when we think about it with different aspects. So when I think about when we started our weaning journey with our son, we knew that creating, you know, healthy habits early on around food and, you know, those kind of tastes and textures that you were exposed to would benefit him into adulthood. I feel like that's more widely accepted than the thought of actually that mental well-being and those foundations and that secure attachment. I feel like that's much easier often to skim over, probably because babies are so entirely reliant on you. But often we, I think, just underestimate how much is going on in their little brains because we don't perceive them as being, you know, smart or clever or particularly interactive in that really early stage. But like you say, that's an insane amount of brain development happening on a daily basis that as parents, of course, we want to nurture, but we can only do that by knowing about it, can't we? And that's why campaigns like this are so important, to educate parents and inform them and support them. And you mentioned, you know, that kind of bonding and attachment that's really important for setting those foundations for positive mental health in that long term as well. How can parents make sure that bonding is a smoother journey? Because I know for some parents, Amanda, you know, they feel that instantly and that's really easy and seems really intuitive. But actually, bonding doesn't always happen completely naturally, does it? Sometimes it takes a little bit of work. And I think that's okay too, because that can cause more guilt.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing is not to beat yourself up if you don't feel that instant bond with your child. But there are things you can do to help them bond with you, which will then sort of kickstart your attachment process. And it is things like eye contact, face-to-face interactions, soothing your baby when they cry, you know, picking them up. The whole sort of outdated advice of leaving babies to cry has been shown to be really not the right thing to do. And if you're in tune with yourself and you're feeling good about yourself, you will distinguish between a pain cry, a hunger cry, a tired cry, a grumpy cry. You know, it's and you can respond more authentically and appropriately to meet your children's needs. And if they know that you're going to be there for them when they need you, that's a really key thing. But playing peekaboo, you know, playing games, talking to kids about what's going on around them, they don't respond with words. But it's not long before they can follow your gaze, or, you know, if you're pointing something out and you're saying, oh, there's the truck or the cow or the tractor or the, you know, bus. That's all. They will follow your where you're pointing. They will listen to your tone of voice. Even daily stuff like changing their nappy or feeding them. If you talk them through what you're doing, make it conversational. So you almost give them a pause where they can react. And if they react, you mirror that reaction. So if they smile, you smile back and all of that stuff. They're just really simple things that even a parent who is struggling can do, and that will make them feel better. It's really good for the baby. And it just sort of starts off that virtuous circle.
I love that advice. I remember reading somewhere actually when we had our first little boy about that, just talk through what you're doing. So when we were changing nappy, like, right, mummy's going to undo this now. Now we're going to get the wipes out. And like you say, you start to then pick up on those movements, and then maybe you tickle their tummy or you beat their nose, and then you get a reaction. And that, yeah. I think when babies are first born, they don't give much back. That can be really hard as a parent. But actually, as you start to build that, it really, really helps when you get that kind of that reaction back and you feel like, oh, actually, this is quite a rewarding experience now. And I loved what you said around that kind of initial bonding piece, because I think it's something that causes loads and loads of guilt in parents. But actually to know that it can take time. And if, you know, parents that are listening, perhaps that are pregnant still, actually trying to start bonding with your baby in utero while you still got that bump and talking and reading to them then, to try and make that process a little bit smoother, can be quite helpful, I think.
Yeah, because babies can hear in the womb, and that, you know, them recognizing your voice and hearing the rhythms and all of that kind of stuff is all really powerful. And I think just, you know, in the first few weeks, you're right, there isn't an awful lot of reaction coming back. But the sooner you start with those interactions and the smiling and the kind of pulling faces at your baby and, you know, in that face-to-face interaction and playing with them, the sooner they will become interactive. Yeah. So if you're finding it a bit boring after 3 weeks and not much is going on, don't give up because they're not doing it. Almost do it more, because it will help facilitate baby's development, and it will really strengthen those bonds.
100%. And parents love it when they start to recognize what their baby's asking for, because I know loads of new parents, you know, first week they're like, they're crying and I don't know what they want, and it's really hard and really frustrating, and I'm trying this, that and the other. And then over time they're like, oh, they're hungry. Oh no, they're upset there, or and they start to know. And that's a really beautiful thing, I think, to witness through parents' journeys as well, is that really getting to know your individual baby. And that's power, because no one else will pick up on that in the same way that those parents will, which is always so lovely to witness.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And children learn most from the people that they're most closely attached to. So it works both ways. So when you're trying to teach your baby something new, and you're they will respond to you differently to the way they respond to other people. So I think that, you know, that's also really can be really satisfying. And again, if you struggle with the bonds at the beginning, when that happens, it's so worthwhile.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And that's where, again, you know, speaking to parents, having that community, you know, other people that you can kind of bounce off and sharing those honest feelings can be so, so, so helpful. And one of the things I wonder, Amanda, when we talk about, you know, supporting early mental health in babies, newborns, children, young people, we know, you know, there's no surprise that we're living in a mental health crisis. There are so many adults, young people struggling with mental health in various degrees and various settings. Do you think that actually addressing this issue and these early development kind of milestones and brain connections, do you think that this could really be an essential part of addressing that wider mental health issue?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, as we were talking about earlier, the foundations for good mental health are laid down right in the early days. And I think making sure that we've got those building blocks to build mental health on. And it's not a, you know, you get it right in the first 2 years, you don't need to worry about it again. But it just makes it a lot easier. You're building that resilience. And if you start thinking about it early, it becomes habit, and you form good habits that you keep going with, you know, as the children get older. And that, you know, things like communication and, you know, interaction and feeling safe and feeling, you know, that's those strong bonds. You know, it's just easier to keep them going than it is to start from scratch when you get to teenage and go, oh my goodness, my teenager is struggling. What do I do? You can't rewind the clock. So much better. A preventative approach is always much more effective and less costly, less energetic, you know, takes less effort than a crisis management. So we want to move to a preventative approach to mental health, absolutely.
And I would definitely argue that trying to communicate and bond with a newborn baby is probably easier than a teenager that then knows everything about the world. So I feel like if we're going to pick our battles as parents, let's start from when they're little and immobile than when they are teenagers that think they can run the country.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in those early newborn days, Amanda, to anyone listening who's about to have a baby or is in the depths of that, you know, fourth trimester, what things would you recommend parents can actively do in their day-to-day to really support their baby's brain development and that positive mental health, hopefully, into the future?
So the first thing I would say is look after yourself. Make sure that you're okay, because you are your baby's version of normal. But then it's simple things like talking to your baby and pointing out the things that they're seeing and reacting to their emotions. So if they're smiling, you smile back, mirroring their actions, you know, raising their hand and waving, all those kind of things. And just being there for your baby and interacting. And it doesn't have to be all on the mother. This is about the child having some primary carers that they have those reaction in, you know, the bonds with and the attachments to. So it's about not feeling like you have to do it all on your own, but the more stimulated and the safer and the more attached your baby feels in the early years, the better. You know, they stand a much better chance in life going forward.
I love the simplicity of that, because I think as new parents, you are learning so much, you're juggling so many new tasks, new identities, you know, you're sleep deprived, you're recovering, the energy levels are so rock bottom, aren't they? So I love the idea that actually we're not necessarily adding in to anything you weren't going to be doing anyway, like you were going to have to sit and feed your baby. Choosing to do that with eye contact and conversation rather than sitting on your phone makes a massive impact. So it's not adding to the day, it's just tweaking the way that we do things.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's okay to ask for help as well. And so when you realise how important those early years are and those bonding moments, the washing up can wait, the laundry can wait. You know, ask a family member or a friend to help out with some of the stuff that you can delegate so that you are able to prioritise those moments with your children. And let the children see you doing the washing up or whatever, because again, that's, you can be talking to your baby who's in the rocker whilst you're washing up and talking and, you know, playing with the bubble, blowing the bubbles around. All of that stuff is all just, it's about bringing that playful approach into everyday life and interacting with your baby so that they know you're there, they know they can trust you, and they are becoming increasingly attached to you.
I love that. I think we often underestimate the role that play has in the everyday things that we do. Like, I always feel really sad when parents tell me that they have to have baby at nap time so that then they can do all those household chores in nap time. And I'm like, no, that's the time for you and to preserve your mental well-being. Actually, kids love the Hoover. It's got lights and noise. You know, at Christmas, we've had tinsel round ours. And like you say, washing up is like the ultimate sensory play, isn't it? It's great. So actually allowing what we consider an everyday chore to them is incredible. And there is so much to learn from putting your fingers in a bubbly washing up bowl and watching, like you say, all the songs that can come from water play is a great opportunity to get those chores done that perhaps make you feel better and give you that clarity, but get that interaction in at the same time so that we can ditch some more of that guilt and be in that better place as parents.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, like you say, engaging the children, the babies, even babies who are, you know, immobile, they're in a rocker or they're, you know, on a playmat, having that around you whilst you're making the dinner, always, you know, obviously being safe around trip hazards and hot stuff, but, you know, washing up or whatever it is you're doing, involving the baby and interacting with them as you're doing it, just like you would, you know, an older child, and just bringing them into the process is incredibly powerful.
Yeah, and so easy to do. And I really think that actually doing that will lessen that mum guilt for so many, because you always feel like, oh, I've got to leave the baby to do X, Y, and Z. But actually, if you can combine the two, that I think can be a real game changer for parents in a super sustainable, simple way. So thank you for kind of sharing that wisdom, Amanda. So, so helpful and supportive and reassuring. Now, everyone that comes on the podcast, I ask for three top tips. And I feel like that one that we've just talked about should be top of the list because I love it. It's definitely one that I'm going to be using. But I wondered if you could share with us what your three top tips would be to people listening.
Yeah, I think making it playful so that you enjoy it, you have that interactions naturally and as part of everyday activities absolutely should be the top one. I think the next one would be look after yourself and make sure that you are okay, because you're not going to be any use to your kids. You can't pour from an empty cup, kind of, you know, that kind of ethos. So it's okay to ask for help. You are not, you know, you don't have to do it all yourself. And then I think the third thing is to try not to get distracted by or compare yourself to others and get distracted by all the kind of social media fads and go to some sources of solid information like the Start for Life website, where you can really, you get evidence-based advice from a trusted source that means that you can make the right decisions for your family. And I think they would probably be my top three for today.
Amazing. Thank you. And for anyone listening that wants to hear a little bit more about this amazing campaign that Dr. Amanda's been working on, if they could tell us, then head to the NHS Start for Life website, which is where you can find more about all of these incredible things that we can do as parents in an easy, sustainable way to support our little people. Thank you so much for coming on to chat, Amanda. It's been fantastic to talk to you.
Oh, I've loved it. Thanks for having me.
Before I head off, I need to tell you something. 68% of you who listen to my show have not hit the subscribe button. So can you do me a favour? And if you've ever enjoyed listening, hit subscribe now. It makes a huge difference, helping me to keep bringing you episodes. And together, we can then reach and empower more women on this journey. If you are a pregnant or newly postpartum listener and are looking to have the healthiest, most positive and informed journey that my exclusive Your Pregnancy and Your Postnatal Journey courses may be for you. I work with a select number of women in a bespoke way, with unlimited access to me and my expert team, for the most transformative level of support at this important time in your life. We only get one shot at getting this time right. So to get in touch and find out more, head to midwifepip.com.